Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Chuck Hammond broadcasting live from the global headquarters of the 401k Study Group. The show is content that moves the needle, where we bring resources, providers, and a myriad of other industry stakeholders to try and help a 401k-centric advisor grow and scale his or her retirement plan practice. And I am doubly blessed today because Robin Green from FI360 has graced me with her presence for two podcasts in a row, which you, if you are hearing these on sort of a delayed basis, it's because Robin is busy scurrying around the country like a financial wellness fairy, talking about this to advisors and participants and plan sponsors. And so today we are going to be talking about a topic that's near and dear to my heart, which is financial wellness. For those of you who don't know Robin and didn't listen to the podcast we just did like 45 minutes ago, Robin is a senior vice president and the head of data analytics at the Anschleck Company, which is a family company owned by FI360 or somehow thereabouts. And don't let the head of data analytics confuse you. She's the person that gets to look at the numbers and say, so what? What does that mean? How do we translate this into our constituents and our clients? So, Robin, thank you very much for being back on the show again today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, especially on this topic. You know, I love the fact that you said I'm going around the country like a financial wellness fairy. I wrote that down. Thank you. That's my new title.
Yeah. So Robin's going to be in four different cities over the next few days talking about financial wellness. And for those of you who follow me on LinkedIn or follow me on Twitter or have heard any of my podcasts on the topic, you know it's one of those things that I actually started talking about more than two years ago at the first Excel 401k conference. And since then, with a number of partners and with a number of people, I've been trying to beat this drum. So because Robin has a lot more credibility when it comes to data and analytics than I do, I'm going to ask Robin, I'm going to ask you one question. Financial wellness, is it fluff or is it substance, and can you prove that?
Well, from every angle I've looked at it, it is substance. It is substance for participants, for plan sponsors, for advisors, for record keepers, and for asset managers. I've only seen this as like a out of the ballpark win for everyone who participates.
So when I first started my career in the financial services business, you know, we were mentored by I started in the life insurance side, and we were mentored by very senior, very successful life insurance agents. And one of the gentlemen told me once, he said, Chuck, when you talk to people about life insurance, they don't have to like it. They just have to do it. And have we arrived at the point now where an advisor needs to be prepared to answer the question about financial wellness?
Yeah, there is no doubt that if you haven't had a conversation with your plan sponsor clients yet about financial wellness, then they're having those conversations with someone else, and you're missing the eight ball. The majority of plan sponsors are thinking about it. It's out in the marketplace. Record keepers are talking about it. Your competitor advisors are talking about it. We did a study about 2.5 years ago, and it was a focus group of plan sponsors from small to large size, just around what do you think about financial wellness? And the majority of them said, it's a conversation I want to have. I want to understand how it works, why I might do it, what are the benefits for me, and what are the benefits for my employees? And at that point, about 15% of the advisors that we worked with said they've actually had that conversation with their plan sponsors. So if you're not having the conversation with them, someone else is.
Interestingly enough, you know, when I was on that first panel a couple of years ago, there was another advisor, and then there was a financial wellness provider. And each of us had a very different angle. And if you've heard me talk about financial wellness, and you've heard me talk about it more than once, I always tell this story. On one end, the advisor said, you know, as 401k advisors, we're always asked to do more. And in his defense, I would agree. Not only that, we are normally subject to a rather large amount of regulatory pressure and fee compression. So we're always trying to find value. And on the other side was me. And I said, you know, in some shape or form, we've always done participant education. But we've never called it financial wellness. But my biggest fear is if you don't do it, somebody else will be having the conversation. It could be the bank. It could be the employee benefits provider. It could be a competitor, an advisor practice that's a competitor to you. So you don't want to have that. So, Robin, you know, when you start talking about the whole gamut of financial wellness, you've said that financial wellness is big, financial wellness is working, how to get started and do well. So my question is, we know that most participants lack savings. They couldn't afford a $500 emergency without going to a credit card or borrowing money from their 401k plan. These financial pressures add to normal stress, which affect the workplace. So we know it's there. We know it's there if you work in a big company, if you're in a small company. But do you have statistics on how financial stress actually hurts employees' productivity?
Yeah, that's great. So when we did our primary research, we talked to advisors, but we also scanned the marketplace to look for the data points that will help advisors have the conversation with the employers that they're working with. And demand from employers is making it big. We found a study from PricewaterhouseCoopers in 2016. It was an employee financial wellness survey, and they found that employers told them 46% of their employees were distracted by finances at work, and they spend at least 3 or more hours at work on personal finance issues. So if you do the math on that, really simple, let's say you're an employer with 100 employees, 46% of your employees have issues. So that's 46 employees, 3 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, that's 7,176 hours unproductive, focused on financial challenges in their lives. So if you multiply that by, let's just say $15 an hour, let's just pick a number, that's $107,640 a year of lost productivity for an employer. Imagine if you had 1,000 employees.
Let's just, what I was going to say, Robin, was let's just pretend you're wrong and it's only half right.
Yeah.
That's $53,000 a year. And not only that, not only is it the money, the actual impact that it has on your business if you lose an existing customer or client or you lose the attention of a valuable employee. It has to do with the money. And that's what we're talking about, numbers, because you're the head of data. But at the end of the day, it can be far more expensive if one of those hours costs you something larger than that. So I talk to a lot of advisors around the country, and it's one of the nicer things I get to do with being involved with the 401k study group. And a lot of the conversations of financial wellness, oh, it's the new F word, it's just lipstick on a pig. I think the proverbial horse is out of the barn, and advisors need to be prepared to have the conversation. And Robin, you alluded to me earlier that plan sponsors are now being the proactive ones. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that varies by industry and by region, I think. But overall, they want to have the conversation. It doesn't mean they want to implement a program right now. They're hearing enough about it, and they're seeing the stress of finances on the employees in their business that they want you as a trusted advisor to be able to at least counsel them on what are my options as an employer? What does this mean? What are the benefits? What are some of the challenges with a financial wellness program and strategy? Is it something that I should do, and how should I do it? So, Chuck, what we're seeing is, as we studied what advisors are doing and how advisors are helping, we saw 5 different paths. Path 1, 27% of them said, we align with the record keeper. We don't have to be the subject matter experts on this. We're working with partners out there who have these services available. We just need to make sure for each of the employers we advise and consult with, they're getting what they need out of those programs. So just being involved on the strategy side of that. And oh, by the way, because we have this fee benchmarking tool, and advisors tell us how much they get paid on average for their different plan and different characteristics, what we see on average, if you're involved in program strategy, not delivering financial wellness, but just helping set up the strategy, those advisors that do for a $100,000 plan generate 27% more revenue from that plan than those that don't.
So this is
just being involved in the strategy.
So correct me if I'm wrong, not even implementing, not delivering, but going out and helping it to define the strategy, advisors can actually and are actually charging a fee, adding value, and increasing their revenue. So just correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct. That's what we're seeing in the data.
Okay, so let's talk about, you said that there were five paths, but before we get to the other three, the other four, let's talk about the opportunity. How many sponsors roughly do you think have a program today versus how many may have one in a few years?
Yeah, so based on what advisors told us as they look across their book of business, about 17% of their plan sponsors have some sort of financial wellness program in place today, but they expect within the next 5 years, 51% will have a financial wellness program in place. So we're not saying every single plan sponsor out there is going to implement, but there's going to be a jump, there's going to be a larger majority, and you got to be able to have the conversation and be involved because it's generating success.
Okay, so you know that's a lot of opportunity with only 17% of the market actually having some type of program. Now, I don't know how robust or how detailed or how any of the semantics are with that, but that's a pretty large opportunity. So there's five sort of paths that I think and that I think you would agree with that the advisor needs to be able to take. You can choose whichever poison you like. The first one was partnering or aligning with the record keeper. But as an advisor, you have to be able to have a stance on this. What are the other four?
Well, 21% said they're building their own capabilities. So they've got their own topics and a complete financial wellness program to bring out to the plans that they work with. Another 16% actually are working like a search and selection to go out to third-party financial wellness providers and choose the right one for each one of the employers that they work with. A smaller percentage, 10% of advisors told us, they actually outsource. They chose one third party, and they bring that third party consistently to all of the clients that they work with. And then we still see 18% avoiding financial wellness, which can be okay if that's not your expertise and your passion. It's fine to avoid financial wellness, but at least have the talking points and the ability to explain why it is your business has taken the stance that financial wellness isn't the path you're going to help with.
So by default, not making a choice is a choice, and I'm glad that someone in statistics actually believes that, because when I say that to people, sometimes their eyes gloss over. So you've got 17% of plan sponsors have a plan now, but up to 51% could have one within 5 years. And as an advisor or an advisory practice, you have five paths to take, one of them which is, you know, just pretty much saying, hands off, I'm not going to do it, I'm going to avoid it. But let's talk about, is it working? Do plan sponsors, but more importantly, let's not forget, the plan wasn't set up for the highly comped or for the owners of the business. It was set up for the rank and file employee, the actual participants in the plan. Are there any indications that it is actually working?
Yeah, there really are. So there's another study we looked out and found to look at employers and what they think, and it was the Society for Human Resource Management did a database on financial wellness in the workplace, and they say 72% of employers who are offering financial wellness think it is effective at improving employees' financial well-being. And a Hewitt study in 2016 creates a very strong link between health and wealth. So 80% of employers believe that physical, mental, and financial health are related and that they need to be addressed together. So taking a look at, if you're looking at your book of business and where you want to start having financial wellness conversations, your employers who already implement a health wellness program are probably an ideal place to bring out the topic of financial wellness.
So, you know, Robin, when I talk to advisors, you know, that's the first hurdle they need to get over is, oh, the data's weak. We don't know if it's working. We don't know if it's anecdotal. And I think that when you look at how these studies have ramped up over the last 2 years, I don't think there's an argument that not only is it needed, but that it is working. So that's the first hurdle that a 401k practice or even a wealth management practice who could implement financial wellness needs to get over. The second is, you know, the cost. You mentioned the cost. And I don't mean, you know, what does it cost the advisor to do? Because obviously, you provided some statistics on, if you are actually part of the provider search, you're out and facilitating the search, compiling the data, you can actually increase fees. You talked about a number of not having a program with financial stress, about $108,000 a year if you have the average 100-person employee. But the other hurdle we get to when I talk to advisors is who pays for it. When you look at a well-running retirement plan, you know, you've got a 338 money manager, or maybe you have a discretionary trustee. You might have an outside 316. You have an advisor. You have a record keeper. You might have a bundled record keeper third-party administrator. You've got a lot of moving parts. A lot of the advisors say, Chuck, listen, I can't go back to my plan sponsor with something that's actually going to cost them more money. So my question to you is, who is paying for this wellness that's working?
So that was a real big problem that we wanted to get to the root of. So we talked with 16 different third parties who are delivering financial wellness today and 15 different bundled record keepers to find out who's paying for financial wellness today. And for the 16 third parties, all of them have explicit fees for the program. Two of them said participants always pay for those fees. The other 14 said the plan sponsor themselves are ponying up dollars for the fees for the program. And they believe, and even the two that are having the participants pay, believe that when the plan sponsor is invested in the program and has skin in the game, they work harder to make sure participants understand the value and get the maximum benefit out of the programs, so they're more effective for employees. So that's the third party side. But when you flip the coin and look at what do record keepers have, they've traditionally had education. Now they're rolling that up under the term of financial wellness. And we haven't yet talked about the definition of financial wellness, which is always the first question most people ask me. But for bundled record keepers, all 15 told us they actually grouped that into the pricing overall. So it's in the record keeping fees, and there are no explicit fees for the plan sponsor or the participants. So when we talked to this focus group of plan sponsors a couple of years ago, here's a direct quote from one of them. This is a potential no-cost benefit we can offer our employees, and that's increasingly important in today's environment.
You know, in the go-go days of the tech boom, you know, when we would get calls from plan sponsors or business owners saying that they had to have a retirement plan, and my first question always was, why? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of compliance. It's complex. It's not like dental insurance. Why would you want to start one? And they said, because our competitors have one. So what you're alluding to is that you need, in a competitive job market, and especially in certain industries, you need to have all the steak and the sizzle that you can to attract the best people. But even if you're not in one of those fields, you need the best benefits in order to retain the people that you want to stay there. And I'm a little remiss in not asking you the definition of financial wellness. I must admit, a little remiss in not asking you, but you and I have talked about this for so long, and I think I've spoken about it, that I actually take it for granted that people know what that actually means. So because you're the head of data and analytics, that means, you know a lot of stuff. What is financial wellness?
Well, I don't know if I know a lot of stuff, but I listen. And in all the conversations that we had with plan sponsors, with record keepers, with third parties that are invested in financial wellness, it's the definition that I would boil up from all of their different specific terms is it's a process of learning about, understanding, and managing short and long-term savings so you can invest in a secure financial future. the marketplace still defines it on spectrum. So on one side, the left side, it's all about retirement and saving for retirement. But I would challenge that that's not financial wellness, that's retirement readiness. On the right-hand side, it's financial wellness, and that's helping to remove the barriers that keep people from saving for retirement. So they have credit card debt, they have student loans, they want to buy a house. All of these financial elements that say this takes priority over saving for retirement. So how do we help them manage that so that they can effectively save for their long term?
So let's recap. We've talked about the definition of financial wellness, and maybe we did it backwards, but sometimes that happens. We talked about if it's working or if it's not working, who's asking for it, and what path the financial advisor or the retirement plan-centric advisor needs to take if they're not going to be the 18% who puts up a big stop sign. So if you're the other group of advisors or the other group of advisory practice, how do you get started?
Yeah, that's always the question that people want to know. From my perspective, start with employers where you're going to have success. So look for those who are paternalistic. They have strong HR leadership. They've already employed a full suite of auto programs, so you're not trying to solve all of the retirement plan issues. They're ready for the next step, so what more can they do to help their employees and participants? They have a pretty high concern about attracting and retaining talent. They look to your firm as a trusted business partner, and they're willing to explore with you because you're new at this. And maybe they've already implemented a health and wellness program where they could pony up one or two topics around financial wellness to bring out at the same time. That's where
when I talk to financial advisors that are new to the retirement plan space, you know, I always joke around that the learning's in the doing. You know, you're not gonna convince someone to give you a retirement plan if you don't go out and ask them. And I think you're not gonna get someone to consider financial wellness for their employees, for their plan participants, if you don't go out and broach the topic. So I think that all of what you're saying, go to your best clients. Go to your clients who do a lot for their employees. Go to your clients who value the relationship they have, not just with you, but even maybe with some of their other providers, and talk to them about this. I wouldn't say it's a phenomenon, but I would say it's something relatively new in the space. But it directly translates to their bottom line, whether they realize it or not. But I think one, and we only have a few minutes left, and I want folks to know the other hurdle that a lot of advisors have is actually getting the participants to look at the stuff. So could you drop two or three sort of best practice ideas that you can convince the advisor that there is more than one way to reach the participant?
Yeah, so this is my favorite thing. We did this research in partnership with Hartford a little over a year ago, and through that we worked with an advisor out of North Carolina to develop an employee survey, and it's really short, very, I think, 5 or 6 questions on it, just asking employees, what topics would you attend and how would you like it delivered? And from there, he built out one program at a time based on what most employees at that employer wanted to hear about. So, for example, what we learn in doing a study and actually asking people what would you want to hear about and how would you attend, we find that when it's a topic like credit or debt management, people get embarrassed and they're not going to show up in a room full of their peers to talk about credit cards and debt management. But if you put a webcast out there, people actually want the information and the insight, and they attend, and they ask questions, and it's anonymous, and they're able to, you know, maintain their dignity and still get some really good information. So just basically asking employees, what topics would you attend, and how would you like that delivered, brings you a 10 leaps beyond to success.
Robin, I think that's a great tip. We see that even in enrollment meetings. You know, people are really reluctant to ask questions because they perceive their questions to be basic. And what I found after 20 years is that I've had a lot of really crazy questions inside of retirement plan enrollment meetings, but almost all of them were asked by people who were not afraid to be embarrassed, which, you know, that's not a lot, or people that had been with the company for a very, very long time. And they were really being advocates. And I think you're going to see that when it comes to wellness. When you have, you know, an employee inside of a company who's been there 25 years and he or she stands up and says, this is the best thing I've ever done because no matter what my balance is, if I hadn't put that money away, I wouldn't have it and I should have gotten started earlier. When you have somebody like that in a company that is willing to advocate for their fellow coworkers, that's a big deal. Now, there is one other question that I'm almost afraid to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there any impact when you not only invite the employee, but you invite the employee's spouse?
Yeah, without a doubt there is. You know, money is a family issue. It's not an individual issue. And that might be one of the mistakes we made in the 401k business 20 plus years ago when we first started going down this path. Delivering it through employers is good, but remember that this is a family decision. So if you can, you know, host those meetings and invite spouses or allow spouses to come into the office to have those conversations and attend the sessions, you're going to have not only greater participation, but better actions and happier employees.
Well, I think it's important, you know, when you do these meetings, you know, inevitably you have to go over the point of the enrollment book where they have to fill out the beneficiary. And, you know, when I started doing this 20 years ago, I would literally have men come up to me and say, do I really have to put my wife's name down on this? And I say, no, you don't have to, but she has to physically sign the form that waives her right. And they would make a comment, well, that stinks. And then I would say, well, then you can write your congressperson. But, and the worm turns 20 years, you know, 10 years later, where women are asking the same thing, like, hey, I don't want my husband having access to this money. So I think you're right. You know, it's become one of those things, and I think I read a statistic recently that, you know, 56% of all household financial decisions are made by the wife. And I don't know how things work in the average American household, but I do know that money is a family decision. And even from when our kids were at a very young age, we tried to get them involved in some of those things. As recently in my little town of Hanover, we opened a Sam's Club, which you would have thought it was Disney World, the way people lined up to get free cupcakes. But, you know, we brought my youngest over there shopping, and he was doing the math to see if we were actually saving versus buying on Amazon or buying at Target. And so it is a family decision, and I think a lot of employers might be reluctant to either give access to, say, a webinar replay if folks want their anonymity. They want to take in the content and then maybe email or call with a question. But I also think it's important to give the spouses access to the same material. Because let's be honest, you know, if only 17% of plans have a wellness program, a financial wellness program implemented, and your spouse works outside of the home as well as inside of the home, there's a really good chance she needs this or he needs this information as well. So thank you for, you know, once again backing up my anecdotal evidence with your opinion as well. So, Robin, if folks want to learn more about this wellness, you're traveling around the country, maybe they would like you to come in and talk to their planters, objective third-party relay of the information. How do folks get a hold of you and learn more about what you can do to help them learn about financial wellness and share it with their clients?
Well, you're always welcome to go to the FI360 website, and there's opportunity out there to contact us. But if you want to talk to me directly, you can certainly send me an email, and we can set up time to talk. I'm at robin.green@fi360.com. And by the way, all the results of the research with advisors are available at hartford.com. I think it's /financial wellness. So all of that information, Hartford sponsored the research and has it available at no cost to advisors to be able to read and digest.
Robin, as always, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule, especially this next couple of days, your busy travel schedule, to be on with me twice in one day. I look forward to having you back on in a month or two, and we can talk about how your junket went as being the financial wellness fairy, and you can talk to me about some road stories and how it was received and how it was taken in by both advisors and by plan sponsors. So thank you once again very much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Chuck.